shutdown is coming to an end. Hey, everybody, this is Jamie Davis. Welcome to the Moderate Podcast, episode number 28 for this January 25th, 2019. We are a day late on our episode. I realize that. I apologize for that. But, it's been one of those weeks that I went to bed late every night. I had trouble sleeping, had a lot on my mind. And so basically by the time last night came along and it was time for me to, I'd finished making sure all the kids were asleep. And my wife told me, I came in our room and she thinks I probably was sleeping even before I hit the pillow, that I was snoring, within a couple of seconds. So there was just no way that I was going to be able to record a podcast episode, because you're listening to the podcast, you listen to the episode, you listen to, we run 35 to 40 minutes on average. And you hear what I'm doing, everything. But you got to remember, there's a lot of time that goes in before it, and there's time that goes in after it with post-production, because the sound's usually not perfect. And so I have things, filters that I have to run on it and things like that. Then I have to write what I talked about and upload the episode to the website, to Anchor and all that stuff. So there's a lot of time and energy that goes into the show beyond just me talking to the microphone. So it's not, the show doesn't take me 35 to 40 minutes to do. That's just the time I spend recording. So anyway, that's just a long way to say I'm here now. Today was my day off, because I don't know how I would have made it through today if I had to go to work today. So here we are. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the government shutdown appears to be over. It's still pending the final legislation that would come out of Congress to the president's desk. But the president did announce that they have come to a deal to at least end the shutdown. There is no resolution on the wall on border protection reform, those kind of things. Immigration reform is going to probably be part of the conversation. And they have 3 weeks now to come up with a resolution to this. Now, the one major event that we would see between now and February 15th, which is when this resolution would run through, this continuing resolution, is the State of the Union address. And that was obviously a big talking point over the last week and a half, part of this bigger pissing contest that's happening between Donald and Nancy. And it's going to continue to happen. It's going to continue. This is just a delay in it. It's going to probably be a small little truce, but it's going to pick up right up again. I don't see how in the world they've had 35 plus days, and even if you take off the amount of time between when the shutdown began, when Republicans were still in control, to January 3rd. So it's been 22 days since the new Congress was seated. And now we have another 21 days before we're going to be possibly in this situation again. So I don't see how that's going to get resolved at all in the next 21 days. But I wish I would have bet, because Bovada, who does sports betting for all kinds of things, they had odds on when the State of the Union was going to take place. The odds on favorite was February. That's actually was a minus line. The line for giving it in January was plus 750. That what that means is, for every $100 you bet, you would win $750, right? So if you put a $100 bet on January being when the State of the Union is delivered, you would get a total of $850 back, your $100 bet plus $750 for winning. And so, man, whoever bet on that won big time. And maybe Donald put a bunch of money on it, or he had somebody put some money on it so that he could do that. And so you might have heard that in the background, but we just got a news alert from Fox News. Senate passes bill to open government by voice vote. So they're working on that. The House will have to do the same. And then they will get the government back up and running. So again, with that whole State of the Union thing, of course, Trump was saying, hey, I'm going to be there anyway, even with the shutdown. And Nancy Pelosi basically disinvited him. And so there was a lot of speculation that he was going to do his own State of the Union, whether it's from the Oval Office or something else, or you could just do it in writing like it used to be done in the old days. And it wasn't really till FDR came along that it became a big pomp and circumstance type of event. But it would have been the first time in modern history anyway that the president did not give a State of the Union address. He accepted defeat, though. He said, you know what? Okay, fine. If they don't want to have me there because of the shutdown, we'll wait till the shutdown's over rather than trying to do it somewhere else. He said in a tweet that he had too much respect for the institution of the House, the history behind it. So, you know, canned answer. Likely what I think happened was, just knowing Trump and having seen what he's been doing over the last 2 years, he probably already knew that the State of the Union was probably going to happen anyway at that point. I think they knew they were working on a deal to get the government back open. And then that, but he was trying to hold out as much as he could and then put out the possibility that he's just going to declare a national emergency and have the Army Corps of Engineers go down and build the wall anyway, kind of stuff like that. But ultimately, here we are. Then when he gave the speech telling that they had a deal, it all of a sudden turned into this another big, long speech about why we need the wall. The left will never concede on the need for a wall because, for one thing, we have a wall. And then most of the people that are coming in here actually do come through the ports of entry, even though Donald Trump told us stories where they drive up to the border and before they get to the entry point, they turn right or left. They go out into the desert, they find a place where there's no border and no wall, and they just drive right through. And that's how human trafficking and drugs get in the country. Although we do hear statistics from ICE, Border Patrol, saying that, okay, actually there is a lot of stuff that sneaks in through the borders, right? Through the ports of entry. So, okay, so who's telling the truth? And, of course, people that support the left are going to say that they're right, and people that support Trump, and most Republicans probably too, are going to say that they're right. And I don't see what 3 weeks of what this 3 week time period is going to solve in that realm, because no one's going to change their mind on it, and there's no incentive for anybody to change their mind on it. Do you think someone that supports Nancy Pelosi is all of a sudden going to become a Trump supporter over the next 3 weeks? Do you think someone that supports Donald Trump is going to become a big Pelosi fan over the next 3 weeks? No way. It's not going to happen. And so we're just going to see this pissing contest between the two continue, and it's not going to solve a bit of anything, really. You know, speaking of the border situation, you know, I am the son of an immigrant. My mom immigrated here in the 50s at the age of three or two. Actually, she was still two. She hadn't turned three yet. So she came here at the age of two, and she is now a United States citizen. My grandparents and her immigrated here legally. And we're at the point where I think we're going to need to have more immigrants. Again, legal immigrants. I still believe that this is a country of immigrants because I'm a product of an immigrant. Obviously, I was born here, but my mom came here in the 50s. And I believe that at the end of the day, we need to have some beefing up of our immigration policies. And to allow more people into the country and have more resources. See, the resources that we really need are the ones that can process these people that are on these long waiting lists to get into this country, beef that part of it up, get people through the process faster, and then if they're here on a temporary visa, beef up the staffing that takes care of keeping track of those people and getting them out when they're supposed to go out. Or providing programs to get them to be permanent residents. Because right now, we're at a point where unemployment is low. And part of the reason is, there's several reasons. The economy's good, number one. But number two, we have more people leaving the workforce to retirement than we have entering the workforce. And as you may or may not have heard, people aren't having kids as much anymore. So we're not replacing the population. So the only way, and again, the social programs that we have for old people, which, by the way, the official name for Social Security is OASDI. So that is old age security and disability insurance. I think that's the name of it. I'd have to look it up again, but it's something. The OA is for old age. And in 1940, this is a number. This is a statistic that always gets me. In 1940, for every one person on Social Security, we had 45 workers. So you had 45 people paying into it and only one actually receiving it. That ratio today is now 2-1 and continues to drop. So we, you know, when you look again, when you look at unemployment, unemployment is the percentage of people that are in the workforce that want a job that can't get work, that don't have one. Maybe they can't get one, but they don't have one. Okay. The labor participation rate continues to drop because there's just more people retiring out of it than are entering it. And that's kind of the point. So there's millions of unfilled jobs in this country, and we don't have enough people to fill them. And that's part of the reason why, is because, again, we have a good economy, so the demand is there. But the reason we don't have the people to fill them is because more people are leaving the workforce than that are entering it. And so how do you solve that? You bring in people from the outside. And if you want to have a big increase in infrastructure spending and rebuilding America type of things, you're going to need even more people to do that, because that's not even counting for those kind of things. So really what we should focus on, instead of a wall, we should focus on, number one, technology for the Border Patrol. We should look at drug reform, because if you make some drugs legal, it takes away income from the drug cartels and takes away their power. Their power is in their users. And as long as the United States is a huge consumer of drugs, that's going to continue to be the case. They're going to figure out ways to get those drugs into this country one way or another. And if they are going through open gaps in the border because there's no wall there, even if you build the wall, they're still going to figure out ways to get it because there's still a demand. And those guys are ruthless enough, cunning enough, and have the resources to get it done. And I've talked about that before. So anyway, that's my thought on that. So, of course, Andrea Ocasio-Cortez, I hate that we keep talking about her, but I got to bring up a couple of things. One thing where she got unfairly attacked again, and it's because, you know, people are attacking her policies, and then it turns out, oh, crap, there's actually a lot of people that agree with her, so we can't really attack her on that because the majority of people are actually agreeing with even Fox News came out with a poll saying that the majority of Americans agree with a high tax rate for ultra wealthy people. And that's just ultra wealthy from an income standpoint, not from necessarily an asset standpoint. You know, you talk about Jeff Bezos being the richest man in the world, at least for now, until his divorce is finalized, that he is, you know, worth all these billions. That's his net worth, though. He hasn't made income of $120 billion or whatever it is. It's just the value of his stock. If Amazon stock were tomorrow somehow to just completely collapse and be worth pennies on the dollar, then he wouldn't be worth that anymore. So you're not going to get income from guys like that, because he's getting his money. A lot of his money is actually tied up in the stock itself. So when you talk about incomes of that level, you're talking about like athletes, celebrities. Those are just some examples of people that make a lot of money in cash, in actual income. CEOs, some do get a big paycheck, but they also get a lot of their pay in stock options, which again is going to have some future value, right? There is a value to those stocks that they have to pay at the time that they earn them, but the real unlocking of that value is going to be in the future. when they sell the stock, and then you're going to have capital gains and things like that. And they were, and if it's on capital gains, this the 70% rate wouldn't necessarily apply to them because you have a separate long-term capital gains tax, right? So let's keep that in mind. So when we talk about $10 million on a 70% tax on the on $10 million, you're talking about the $10 million in first dollar. They're not paying it on all the $10 million. They're paying on everything they make over $10 billion. And to give you an idea, because we always talk about, well, in the 50s and 60s, we had those types of rates, and that's correct. The Revenue Act of 1964, which was signed into law by LBJ, was actually proposed by President Kennedy in his 1963 State of the Union. He called for a plan to drop the top income tax rate from 91% to 65%. And that was on income of $100,000 for individuals, $180,000 for heads of household, which would translate to about $775,000 for individuals today and about $1.4 million for heads of household in today's dollars. Much, much lower than what we're even talking about now. So those are actually modest proposals compared to what we've had in the past. And as we've talked about, though, that if the reason you're raising those rates is to then bring in money to pay for this Green New Deal, you're not going to have nearly enough money to do it. And speaking of the Green New Deal, she kind of taught it out on that. So, you know, and she's saying a lot of things, and she's getting a lot of attention, and it's making, you know, the Republicans hate her. I don't like her a lot of her proposals. I think she's a little bit out there on those kind of things. But again, they're having so much trouble attacking her on the issues that they're hitting below the belt. They're going after personally. So she went on Stephen Colbert, which, you know, gratuitous interviews there. And, you know, of course, she's going to get played up real good there. What she said was the Hill posts an article. And this is the headline: Ocasio-Cortez, I give zero F's, and she's is the full word though, about pushback from other Democrats. So of course people are thinking that she used that kind of language. How dare she? And blah blah blah. But there's only one little problem with that. Here is the actual exchange. So she was, you know, so the issue is that she didn't say zero. She said zero. Actually, she kind of said it. But here's what happened. Here's Colbert. Now, Congresswoman, for you and the other freshman members of Congress, you're getting a fair amount of pushback from even members of your own party saying, wait your turn, slow down. Don't ask for so much so fast right now. You're new. Wait your turn for everything and don't make waves. I want to ask you this question in a respectful manner, knowing also you're from Queens, so you'll understand this question. Ocasio-Cortez says, and the BX. Colbert, on a scale of zero to some, how many F's do you give? And he said the full word. After taking a moment to deliberate, and she says, I think it's zero. And he goes, and Colbert goes, that's my thought. So again, now people are saying, oh my God, that's, how can she say stuff like that? And, you know, she has such a dirty mouth and blah, blah, blah. The problem is that she actually didn't even say it. And I have a big problem with this continued attack, you know, these unfair attacks against her, because what it does is it gives credence to her policy, because it's like you feel you're making these attacks on her from a person on a personal level. And that would mean, that would say to me that you feel like you can't get her on a policy level. You can't actually go after her on the issues. So you have to go after her from a personal standpoint, because the issues are too hard to go after her on. And maybe it's because people are actually buying into what she's selling. Again, I'm not, but people are. And now she's saying that if we don't do something about like climate change, the world will end in 12 years. And Washington Post came out an op-ed. It's like, oh my gosh, people are taking her literally. They don't literally mean that. It just means that, you know, the world's not just going to spontaneously combust in 12 years if we do nothing, blah, blah, blah. Well, but when Donald Trump says Mexico will pay for the wall, you take him at his face value as if that we expect that Mexico is going to write us a check for the wall. So we are supposed to take Donald Trump literally from everything he says, but Cortez, we don't have to take literally. We have to actually understand that she didn't literally mean that. It was hyperbole. And, you know, we have to take, we can't, we have to read between the lines with her. Really? Oh, I get it. It's because it's stuff you agree with. And if it's something you don't agree with, you're going to just use the actual words to go after them. Got it. I'm glad I understood that. Now, Al Gore in 2006, and I remember, kind of recall this quote, which is why I went and looked it up. He said in 2006, in 10 years, if we don't make drastic cuts to greenhouse gases, that we will reach a point of no return. Well, we haven't really done that. We've done some, but we haven't really made drastic measures, right? The things that I would consider drastic measures by their standards. And so we're 13 years after that. So by that token, then it's already too late, right? And so now I guess we've gotten another 12 years, according to Dr. Cortez, the scientist. You know, hey, what can I tell you? Jerry Brown was saying that we need to cut CO2 emissions to zero by 2050. Now, if CO2 is considered a greenhouse gas, right, how do we cut CO2 emissions to zero? Is everybody going to start not breathing? Because when we breathe out, we have 7 billion people on this earth. When we breathe out carbon dioxide. So I don't know how we would cut that to zero. Again, is it something that I have to not take literally that he's saying? And I have to say, oh, well, it's artificial means of CO2, whether it's burning of green, you know, fossil fuels and things like that. Is that what he means? But that's not what he said. He said we need to cut CO emissions to zero. Well, we all emit CO2 every time we take a breath. Right now, as you hear me talking into this microphone, I am emitting CO2. So does that mean I needed to stop breathing? Because then, hey, you know, people want to put their money where their mouth is and they want to cut carbon dioxide, just off yourself, right? I mean, then you won't emit carbon dioxide anymore. We'll put you 6 feet under or in a mausoleum or wherever you want to go. We won't cremate you because that would create greenhouse gases, which was really funny. I wonder if any of these climate people, again, I'm not discounting the idea of it, but the hyperbole that that's promoting doesn't help the cause. And the problem is because we have to talk about things. Well, if we don't do something in 10 years or we don't do something in 12 years, if you talk about it in long terms, people don't have any interest because they're like, well, I'll be dead by then, so I don't care. And most people are selfish like that. They don't care what's going to happen in the year 2050 or 2100 if they're not going to be around. They don't care. So in order to get people to actually make changes, you have to be hyperbolic. But when you do it, then people don't take you seriously anyway because you just look like a kook. So it's kind of a lose-lose situation. And if they are right about this, it probably will be too late before the people that have criticized it and were saying, oh, you're just full of it, but by the time that happens, it's going to be too late, I think. We're going to be past that point of no return. But when is that time come? I don't know if we know for sure. We always hear about, well, if this happens, then this is going to happen. It's like, well, the odds are it could happen, right? It's how much those people believe those odds are true. Roger Stone was arrested today. That was quite interesting. We're going to see what happens with that. He's vowing to never testify against Trump. I do believe that. He is being charged with trying to obtain stolen emails from WikiLeaks to help his presidential campaign. So still in the early running on that, but that was not a surprise. I think a lot of people were expecting Roger Stone to go down. It's just going to be a matter of, okay, so we got Paul Manafort a few months ago. We got Roger Stone now. Who's going to be next? It'll be interesting to see. We had talked about the LAUSD strike last week. That is over. It has been settled, so the teachers are back to work. That's pretty good. I had talked about the California budget. I was going to talk about it, but I realized, it wasn't like anything outlandish, nothing that exciting. And it's only the first proposal. So it's going to go back and forth between the legislature and the governor. And, you know, it's just a bunch of Democrats talking about it because the Republicans don't even need to even show up because now they have such a majority. They don't even need all Democrats to get to a 2/3 vote, even if some Democrats dissent. And if they have to dissent because of politics within their local district, they can do it. Because they still have the votes to get things done. That's how much control the Democrats have over the state. Every single statewide elected office is occupied by a Democrat as well. So that's how much of it. But there's one thing in the California budget that one of the big priorities for Gavin Newsom is housing. And he wants to build 3 million new houses between now and 2025. Which would be which would increase our housing production fivefold over what we're doing now. Right now, that would be about 600,000 homes that would have to be produced. Right now, we're producing about 120,000 to 130,000 homes per year. So there's going to be a lot of regulations that need to be cut. They're going to force cities to allow development when a lot of times the cities do slow down because there's a lot of NIMBYism in various areas. And so basically they're going to basically take away their ability to be NIMBYs by forcing housing on them. And likely what that's going to mean is it's going to be higher density development is going to have to happen. There's just not enough land in where people want to live near urban centers or even the suburbs nowadays that they can't even, there's not even enough room to build those houses. So therefore we're going to have to start just doing higher density. And a lot of communities don't want to do that, but then it's not just housing. How do you pay for the infrastructure? Not everyone's going to take the train. Not everyone's going to take the bus. Not everyone's going to take public transportation. You're going to have to build up the road structures as well. With that, you can't expect 100% of those people that are going to go into these new homes to just take public transportation. It's just impossible. It's not going to happen, especially the way that Southern California is constructed. It's almost physically impossible to do that. So speaking of being past the point of no return, that bus, so to speak, has come and gone long ago in Southern California. So you're never going to get to the same type of development that you would need in other parts of the country to be able to hit those targets, because you can't build up here. I mean, you could build up, but then you have earthquakes and things like that. But the bottom line is Southern California is so spread out that if you're going to add more people, you have to increase road capacity as part of that. You just have to do it. There's no other way around it. Last thing I wanted to get talk about real quick is, I've been talking about this subject of toxic masculinity in the last few weeks and the Gillette commercial and the controversy behind that. And, I just want to say that I don't want to give women a complete pass on this thing either, because I know a lot of women that treat other women like crap. And women, you hear the term mean girls, right? Women are so bad towards men, and the double standard that we have nowadays is unbelievable. Part of this is nature. Men are the way they are because they're nature. Society and culture have shaped how we're supposed to act and how we learn and what we teach our kids. And that's why things happen over time. 250 years ago, we had slaves. That would be unheard of these days. I'm not saying that's nature again, but the thing is we evolve, right? It used to be that if you wanted a mate, you go and club her on the head and drag her back to your den, right? That's how things used to work back in the caveman days. And that was nature, because we were animals and we didn't know any better. And over time, that changed. So a lot of things have changed over time. A lot of times for the better, but we evolve. We constantly evolve, and that's how society works. But, you know, but yet women can talk about Magic Mike, for example. You have the movie Magic Mike. Women can talk about that all they want and how hot they are, and they can objectify men. Women objectifying men, to as far as I can tell, has been completely acceptable. There's not been an ounce of criticism, partially because men don't mind in some cases that they objectify them. And so, you know, these women can get all crazy about Magic Mike and strippers and things like that. And that's completely cool. There's no problem with that. But men talk about that way with women. Oh my God, he's a misogynist, he's sexist, and blah, blah, blah. Double standards, right? If there are women, feminists especially, that have a problem with men acting the way they do, and I'm not saying they shouldn't, I'm saying they should, and we as men should keep them accountable, can we do the same? Can women do that to other women too then? I mean, it seems only fair. If we expect men to police other men for their behavior, their bad behavior, then why can't we expect women to police other women for their bad behavior? Because they're not completely innocent in this thing. So can we maybe get that to happen? Can we maybe get men and women to both treat each other better and not objectify each other? If we're going to have one expectation for one gender, we probably should have the same for the other gender. Equal rights, right? You want women to be treated the same? You want women to be treated equal? Then start acting like that towards women. If you expect men, if you're going to set that standard for men, then set that same standard for your own gender. I'll take care of the guys and make sure they're not doing what they're doing if you do the same thing on your end. Okay? Deal? Very good. All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of The Moderate Podcast. Remember to visit our website at www.themoderatepodcast.com. Our links to Facebook and Twitter are on the website. It's easiest to just find us there. If you have not subscribed, if you're just listening to us on our Facebook or Twitter accounts, because I post all the shows there, it's easier if you do subscribe to a podcasting platform. If you listen to it on your phone or even on your computer, if you do it on your computer, Spotify is the one I found to be the best, and we are on Spotify, but we're on a dozen different platforms. So if there's a platform that you prefer, that you like, most likely we are there. But if you don't, even if that platform is not listed, you can go to the website, get our RSS feed, and install it and insert it into your favorite podcasting platform. Again, we will be back next week. And until then, I'm Jimmy Davis. Keep it real.